that turns out to be outside of the rules of the game for what ICANN will pay for. So we've gone around hat in hand and solicited to support this and met with remarkable generosity. It's one of the easiest fundraising activities that I've ever been engaged in. So the several sponsors are shown on your on the screen here, .se and the Open DNSSEC effort that they and others are supporting. Affiliates, GoDaddy, PIR, sponsors.org or operates.org, SIDN, the Dutch Registry, Nominet, the UK Registry, and VeriSign. I want to thank all of our sponsors. Two more thanks. What happened here? That's the program committee. So that's backwards. Forward? Okay. These sessions take a quite a lot of work. In front of you is the program committee. Julie Hedlund, sitting to on my left, does an enormous amount of work organizing things and putting all the pieces together. Lance Wallach, Ross Mundy, Simon McCullough, and I have roughly weekly calls almost continuously during the year. We take a few breaks and often are looking not only at the current, at the upcoming meeting, but sometimes looking at the next one after that and doing a kind of layered planning process. And it operates pretty smoothly. It's a great team, and if anybody thinks that they can help improve, which is how Simon came up one day and said, you know, this is okay, but you could do some better things than I said, and you could help us. And he graciously accepted the invitation. Lance, the same thing. So I really appreciate the team, and you should appreciate how much work goes into it. I also want to express thanks for the for all the folks who put on the DNSSEC for Beginners Monday afternoon. That's an outgrowth of these meetings that we've had, and several months ago, maybe about a year ago, I guess we said it'd be good to have a tutorial, and then we decided we should schedule it at a different time. And that's evolved and matured. I've been caught in the unfortunate position of being double booked at the hours that it's been given, but I've been tracking it as closely as I can, and I understand that it is sort of hitting its speed. I heard a comment from somebody who had actually sat through it multiple times, and his comment was, oh, now I finally get it. So the repetition is helpful. So with that, we'll move on. I hope you all have the agenda. We're 6 minutes into my time, and I actually will keep my remarks quite brief. We have, as we usually do, a very contentful set of presentations on key topics that are current in DNSSEC. Panel discussion will follow on challenges for registrars. We've had very good uptake on the registry side, and now time to focus attention on the registrar side. Joe, you had a statistic about the number of registrars. You're going to share that during then I won't say anything now, but it was a pretty interesting figure. There's a special topic that has gotten a lot of attention about how do you transfer domain names, operational domain operations from one operator to another, or from one registrar to another, or both. And particularly in the context of DNSSEC, how do you do that without losing either operational resolution or the validity? And can you do that all smoothly while the train is in operation, as it were? So there's a variety of meetings and presentations on that are taking place, some in this forum and some other places, and we'll have a short session on that with Debbie Moynihan and Roy Ahrens. Last part of the morning will be experiences, challenges, and outcome of DNSSEC deployment. This is where some of the actual experiences and that's a code word for some of the problem areas come up. And we like to be pretty forthcoming about it rather than try to say everything is all rosy and perfect. It's not bad, but there are details, and that's part of the learning curve. And then we'll finish up after lunch with a panel discussion on activities around the world with, as we usually do, a focus on activities that are relevant to this region. So that's the that's the plan for the day here. And in a moment, a short moment. So I'll say, where Julie is working hard to find the maps that I try to produce that show the uptake of DNSSEC in the ccTLD registries. It's a world map, so it's harder to show the gTLDs, and it doesn't show anything about the registrars or the validity validation processes, ISPs, and so forth. We'll work on that. I'll say, as these maps are being pulled up, that I started this project some time ago when there wasn't much deployment, but there was a lot of actual deployment, but there was a lot of plans and in place and a lot of discussion. So I wanted to look not only at what the actual facts were of the moment, but also what the announced plans were and schedules over time. I've discovered, as I try to keep these maps up to date, two things. There's enough activity that it's getting harder and harder to get all the data. And the other is that there's so much current activity that getting information about the future is much harder. And so I'm finding that my prognostications are underplaying things by quite a bit, and the actual facts are catching up faster than I can keep track. So with that, here's a map that shows what the actual and planned deployments were as of the end of December last year. The blue is fully operational. The green is partial operation. This can mean that the for example, that the zone is signed but the DS record is not in the root, or that the zone is signed and the DS record is in the root but registration is not yet open for general delegations to subordinate zones, or any other combination. Excuse me, the brownish, orangish color is qualitatively different. That's where the registry has formally announced that it will, in fact, implement DNSSEC. The yellow is an earlier stage that is not uncommon, which is experimental, where the there may be a test bed or there may be some things behind the scenes, but no formal commitment to move forward yet. And then the gray is where there's no announcement and we don't know what's happening. Noteworthy is that even last year, every continent had activity. We are no longer in keeping track of who's the first in every continent. We're past that. And the thing I mainly regret about the map is that, since this is shown in a geographic basis, is that the numbers of registries isn't quite evident visually. And so there are a number of geographically small countries that have been quite forward. So that's the end of December last year. This is March this year. I'll toggle back and forth, and you can see the transition from in the direction of blue. So this is March. This is June of this year. So this is basically now. And this is the projected for the end of this year, and this is the projected for the end of next year. The distinctions from this year and next year are pretty modest. I'll toggle back and forth, and you can see just a little bit. There's only, if you look at the statistic in the lower left, goes from 37 to 38. Oops. That just shows one more country next year. I am completely sure that that's an underestimate, and as I say, represents just a lack of our ability to get that information about what the future plans are. And records will get added to the route. We'll keep track of it. We'll make modifications to the way that we display this in the future and try to bring these more up to date. Here's the same information presented in sort of tabular form and a bar graph there. And as I said, the numbers for the end of next year and even probably for the end of this year are probably underestimates. So it'll be interesting to look back a year from now at these versus what we're showing here, and I suspect things will be better. The top of that, the top line there shows 60 CCTLDs who are in some state of either experimentation or announcement or implementation. And as I said, 37 by the end of this year and 38 by the end of next year that are fully operational. Those are substantial numbers. They're well short of half or 80%, say, of all the CCTLDs, but they are very, very long way from where we were a short time ago, where it was hard to imagine that anybody was going to pay attention. So feeling pretty good, but not too, you know, there's a long, long way to go. As we were saying when the route was signed, it's not the end, it's not the beginning of the end, but it is the end of the beginning, and we're well launched. So with that, happy to take any questions, and even happier to turn things over to Matt Serlin, who will launch into the first panel. Sorry?
We're picking up some...
Oh, just stray noise?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, it's people behind there.
Behind us. Okay. Okay.
Thanks, Steve. So we're going to get things kicked off talking about a registrar perspective, although we have both registrar and registry here represented on this panel. So we're missing Jim Galvin. So I guess, Joe, we'll start with, yep, there's your deck that Julie's running. So we've got a presentation from Joe, and then we're going to kind of open it up. We've got a list of questions that'll guide us through the next 45 minutes or so. So I will turn things over to Joe to run through his deck.
Thanks. I'm Joe Waldron from VeriSign, and I have responsibility for the product management group that was the implementers of DNSSEC within VeriSign. And I would say that, you know, it's a very substantial task for us to implement something like DNSSEC within .com, and it took a very large team of people to do that across engineering operations. There's just a tremendous effort to accomplish that task. And as we were undertaking that, we realized that it's not just something that a registry can do by itself, but it requires significant cooperation and participation across the community. So we spent a significant amount of time looking at what was necessary for the implementation through the registrars. Without the registrars, a registry implementation isn't as valuable as what I know Steve is hoping. So we can go to the next slide. I guess engineers all like statistics and numbers. Steve showed some of these, but I'm going to just talk about them a little bit different. I would say that about one quarter of all of the TLDs are currently signed. And that includes the breakdown that you see here. I think, though, if you look at the composition of what those TLDs are, right now we have .com signed, .net, DNIC signed, .de recently. If you look across which TLDs are signed, it actually represents somewhere between 50 and 60% of the domain names that are currently registered. So if you are a registrant, that gives you the likelihood. I guess it's really binary whether your particular TLD is signed. That's, a tremendous tremendous progress on availability of DNSSEC across a large number of TLDs. The other component for the registrars is that once the TLD is signed, that allows you to establish that chain of trust. And right now we have about 900 registrars across .com and .net, and we have 26 that have actually registered at least one domain name that has a DS record. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but that represents, I think, either 7 or 8 of our 10 largest. So, again, it's a very significant population in terms of the availability of DNSSEC down to the registrant level. Go to the next slide. As I said, we spent a lot of time working with registrars and trying to understand what the challenges and hurdles were, and we wanted to help reduce and eliminate as many of those as possible. So we developed a series of programs and tools to help. And I'll in the sake of time, just address a couple of these that are on the slide here. One is the third bullet on the registrar engineering side, which is a DNSSEC tool guide. That was originally intended to be what I referred to as a quick start guide, so that you, like when you buy some new device, you open the box and it tells you very quickly how to get up and operating. Well, that turned into hundreds of pages of documentation on various DNSSEC tools, and I think has proved to be a very useful guide and asset for our registrars to be able to reference. We also have a DNSSEC transfer white paper, and I'll touch on that a little bit at the end. And then over on the other side is what we refer to as the DNSSEC analyzer, and that's a tool that was built in-house to help conduct analysis of DNSSEC errors throughout the chain of trust. And I'll show you an example of that. Next. We also wanted to really provide information, and the first link on here, verisign.com/DNSSEC, is a DNSSEC resource center that we provide, and that's open to the public, and it's broken into various categories depending on what part of the ecosystem you come from, whether you're an individual registrant, a hardware vendor, ISP, you know, so you can find information that's relevant to your particular need. But again, a lot of this is focused on what we needed to do for the registrars. So we created a DNSSEC forum in a web portal that we operate specifically and limited to access limited just to our registrars. And that DNSSEC forum was intended as a communication channel for the engineering teams to be able to talk and address various issues and facilitate that discussion. As we had several discussions, we realized that the startup cost for registrars would vary based on their particular business model and their customers' needs. So one of the things that we wanted to do, again, was to help reduce some of those obstacles. So we created a cloud-based signing service. So if you follow the flow of this service, it's a very basic picture of how the delegations work for normal registrations, and then if you follow from the registrar when you have a registrant that opts in to sign their .com domain name, the registrar can subscribe that domain name into the cloud signing service, at which point we will pull the zone from the master. If the registrar is hosting that, we'll pull it from their master, sign the zone, and then push it back. So it's very minimal implementation for a registrar to adopt this service, and then you've essentially established that whole chain of trust. And at the point that the registrar wants to invest in additional infrastructure and have their own HSMs or whatever solution they integrate into their environment, then you know, they're already up to speed and can do that as their business demands. Oh, okay, so we did this as a PDF, so now you're not going to get to see the fancy animation, but I'll provide the link to this, but we have the DNSSEC analyzer, or there's a link. Matt will correct me if I get this wrong, but it's a DNSSEC-debugger.verisignlabs.com. So if you go to that link, then you can get a web-based tool, and it's simply you just put the domain name in, and it will validate the chain of trust for that domain name from the root zone all the way down to through the domain. And what you see on the graphic here is a detailed drill down of some of the information. So here you see the .com portion of the results, and in this case you see the green check marks. But if there was an error in any of those checks that it did, it would flag that, and then you could mouse over it, and it will provide more information about what the error is and offer solutions to correct those problems. So we think that this is a very useful tool. It's something that our operations team requested because we know that when you have different types of DNS errors, sometimes it can be very difficult to diagnose very quickly. And this is, again, a tool that we wanted to put into as many hands as we could so that you can help registrars solve their customer service problems very quickly without having to escalate, or registrants can use this on their own and be able to diagnose their problems. And I will also say that it's available as an iPhone app, and I think maybe some other devices. But we've gotten great feedback from people that have used this as a useful tool. Next. Finally, I had mentioned the transfer white paper, and there's a link on the bottom of this slide for where you can download that white paper. But we looked at this as discussion was going on around what are the unique requirements once you have a domain name that's signed and the registrant wants to transfer that name between registrars. And in reality, it's not as much the transfer between registrars. It's really when you're changing hosting. So if a registrar within a registrar, you change hosting providers, or if you're changing registrars. So we looked at several different use cases and identified those in the white paper and provided a process. As Steve mentioned at the beginning, when you transfer a name that's signed, it's important to ensure that you are able to maintain the signatures and ability to validate those names so that you don't have any interruption of service. So most registrars are very familiar with doing that and advising their customers today on how to transfer hosting providers, and DNSSEC adds an additional layer of work that needs to be done to ensure that the incoming and outgoing registrars or hosting providers cooperate to be able to ensure that those names don't have any interruption of service. So with that, I will turn it back to Matt.
Thanks, Joe. So we're missing one of our panelists. I believe, Russ, are you going to run through his deck? Is that the...
Yeah, I'll run through his deck. I'm certainly no Jim Galvin, but we have worked fairly closely with Phileas on some of these things, so I can at least get his slides up and add a few words to him.
He gets credit for being here without even being here. That's nice.
I am really Russ Mundy, but I'm trying to channel Jim Galvin. I'm not Jim Galvin, but I do play him on ICANN panels. How's that? So Phileas is one of the active early leaders in deploying DNSSEC, and we, as part of our efforts, have worked closely with him on a number of various initiatives. And here's, I think, a list of some of their big registry operations that they support. So let's go on, Julie. Mm-hmm. The integration aspect of getting bundling services, I think, is one of the areas that maybe I'm not saying this very well. My goodness.
Guys.
Flashing lights here.
All right. That was exciting.
Lots of excitement here. And this has been an aspect of trying to get, boy, that is distracting.
Is someone doing something with the lights? I don't know if you in the tech booth can see it, but they are doing some strobe effect here that's a little bit distracting.
It's DNSSEC disco.
Maybe it's left over from music night last night in this room, perhaps. This is about where they were standing. Anyway.
Yeah, I think maybe it is.
So I will attempt to carry on here. One of the aspects that have been looked at that needs a lot of attention is the operational practices and activities associated with handling of the keying material and the DS records into and out of the registry. So next, Julie. When registrars look at how they interact with the registries, the registrars are often selling bundled services, and they're looking at incorporating, or at least I think the affiliate's view is they're hoping that DNSSEC will be incorporated into the registrar operations. And of course, from our perspective in the deployment realm oversight of things, we hope that too. And so trying to get the registrar operators to incorporate support, I think, has been an ongoing effort on the part of affiliates. And I think the last number that I heard, and it's probably changed, they actually do have a testing and verification program. I don't remember the exact term that they use for it, but you have to go through an operational test and acceptance as a registrar. And there, I think 10 registrars had completed that the last that I'd heard, and they may or may not have increased the number of that. But that's an area that they've been focusing on. So next, okay. So 100% uptime in services is a real challenge, especially during transfers. And we do have the separate panel on a couple of presentations on that coming up next. And you'll see more detail and more of the specifics there. But it's been a problem in terms of keeping continuity of operations, and it's particularly difficult when the registrar is also providing the name server operation. And so that will get some attention, like I say, later on, but this is an area that affiliates has been working on and trying to get some best practices documented on how to go forward with that. Next. In the broader area of best practices, the handling of keys or handling of DS records, I honestly don't know if they've defined that it will only be DS records. I know that was where earlier they were definitely leaning that they were just going to accept DS records, but honestly, I'm not sure exactly where they are on accepting that, because from a theoretic technical point of view, the registry can accept either one. And I guess that's it. And sorry that Jim wasn't able to be here, and I didn't add a great deal, but at least maybe I gave a little bit of insight from what we'd worked with Phileas on it.
Yeah, no, thanks. I think that was good. So Michaeli Nealon, who's joining us and is our official registrar representative on the panel, doesn't have slides, but I want to put him on the spot anyway. And just ask that he just give us a brief kind of overview from a registrar perspective, kind of at a high level, based on you know what you heard from the registry folks, and then we'll have some discussion.
Thanks, Matt, for putting me on the spot. Very nice of you. Of course, Matt fails to mention that he's also a registrar, though he's pretending to be something else this morning. We're not too sure exactly what. Obviously, I cannot speak for all registrars. I can only speak for the one that I'm involved with. And, you know, I've always found these DNSSEC panels and sessions to be interesting, entertaining, informative, educational, and I can use lots of other adjectives. But ultimately, I'm still not convinced. I mean, this is the key problem. You know, you talk about addressing some of these fine little technical points like key rollovers and signing and unsigning zones and moving things about as if everybody played nice together. The reality is they don't. Transferring a domain between one registrar and another, between one set of name servers and another, even when both parties are playing nice together and aren't causing headaches for each other, more often than not, leads to issues. As I was discussing with Roy last night, who's the man who understands a lot of these DNS points much better than I do. And one of the problems we have at the moment involves one of the large ISPs operating in the Irish market. And no matter what happens, any time one of our clients moves name servers, that ISP can't see the changes. Unless you go off and manually remove the DNS records from the old set of name servers, TTLs are ignored and nothing ever changes. So, I know that's not exactly directly related to DNSSEC, but you know, there's a lot of stuff, you know, here that people assume is going to work and assume that everybody's going to work nicely together, whereas the reality is registrars, hosting providers, we're all competing against each other. And, you know, sometimes we don't play nice together. And on the technical side of things, while it's encouraging to see that the registry operators are finally working on making it that little bit easier for us in the registrar side to implement things, it's still not quite there. Personally, I'm not going to invest any of my company's resources in rolling out DNSSEC until such time as my clients ask for it. Of my 40 to 50,000 clients, we have had one request for DNSSEC to date. One. Do you honestly expect me to go off and spend money, time, resources, and everything else to serve that one customer? Was that Roy?
No.
Roy?
Yeah. So that... and. Sorry, Michaela, were you done? No, well, you touched on a point that was going to be kind of the first point that I was going to raise is, you know, and yes, I am a registrar as well. So we in the registrar community hear a lot from the technical community about implementing DNSSEC, and what I hear a lot from other registrars, including Michaela, is that there just isn't the demand for it. So I guess, and it's an open question for the room as well, who ultimately is educating end users about the importance of DNSSEC to get that awareness raised so that it does start to become... You're pointing at an individual?
No,
or
I'm,
just
I'm just coming back.
Yeah.
Dan Kaminsky.
Well, okay, apart from Dan, I mean, you know, the problem is this. From my personal view, you know, you talk about people, registrants being able to do this and being able to do that with DNS. Ultimately, registrants don't give a damn about DNS. They don't care. They don't know. They don't need to know. Most of us who provide hosting on a large-ish scale, we hide the DNS. We put shiny control panels and user interfaces in there. So, you know, clickety-click, magic happens, stuff gets installed, websites appear. You know, end users don't know what an A record is. They don't know what a quad A record is. They don't know what a C name is. And they don't need to know. You know, and the thing is this, is that, you know, for DNSSEC to be viable, I've said this before and I'll say it again, I mean, even for somebody who actually has taken the time to turn up at these things for the last couple of years, I don't even see the value in it at the moment because the tools aren't there to give me that nasty warning. I have to go off and have to install a third-party plugin into Firefox, for example, so I can even know whether a site that I'm visiting has a record set. And I come from a country where the largest ISP did suffer a man-in-the-middle attack about 18 months ago, on and off for about a week. Users of one of the largest ISPs were being randomly directed all over the internet. But ultimately, users don't give a damn about DNS. It's because it's just something that happens in the background. Now, from the registry side, with the GTLDs, the situation is kind of interesting because, for the most part, they don't have a direct relationship with the registrant. With the CCTLDs, and I'm sure Simon and other people at that can talk to this a bit further, there can be that relationship. But, I mean, how can you possibly incentivize me to actually spend time and energy on this? I don't know.
Yeah, so I guess, Joe, that brings up a good point. Do you, when you're encouraging registrars to implement DNSSEC, what's the sort of marketing spin on, what's the message to registrars?
That's a good question, and it's one of the things that we've done is actually conduct various market research across technology companies, hardware vendors, software providers, individuals. To ask them what their level of understanding and level of expectation was from the DNS, and in some cases these were studies of people that are IT policymakers or decision makers within companies, and there is a lack of understanding of to Michele's point, there is a lack of understanding of the DNS in general. There's a lack of awareness of DNSSEC. But what we did find was that as people were aware of DNSSEC, they were much more likely to realize that there was a need to implement that. So I think that the education is important. So we've provided some of that research, and again, you can go to that DNSSEC Resource Center and I think some of those reports are there, or contact me and we'll get those for you. Patrick, I think you were actually involved in one. The other thing we do is again try to remove some of those barriers. I mentioned the signing service. If you've got one customer, Michele, that wants to implement DNSSEC and they want to sign their own zone, they're doing their own hosting. So you've got some smart tech guy, and all he needs you to do is be able to get that record into the registry. One of the things that we did was part of our registrar interface, the web UI that we make available. You can go in, you get the DS record from that registrant, and you can paste that into the web UI. So it doesn't require you to do any development. But again, you can choose to. That's exactly right. You can choose to invest when the demand is there, and as it grows, you can invest more.
But you're talking about a manual intervention that doesn't scale for me. Every time one of my staff has to manually do anything for any kind of operation, be it for registering a domain name, updating name servers, or in this case talking about DNSSEC, that costs me money. And if we screw it up, there's a liability issue. And this is the other thing as well. If you put humans back into the chain, you leave yourself open to mistakes happening. Which is why automation for companies such as ourselves is so important.
We have a question from the floor, at least one, but we encourage lots, so please.
Patrick Feltz from Cisco, but it's also the case that I happen to run a registrar in Sweden, not an ICANN accredited registrar, and this is another one of those sort of, when we say how many registrars support DNSSEC, do you talk about ICANN accredited registrars, or you talk about registrars all across the globe? So we have to be a little bit careful with words when you talk about those kind of things. Anyways, we made the decision of implementing DNSSEC, and with both registrar and DNS hosting provider, which is two different roles as well, which we'll talk about more later today. And the problem with those kind of things is, of course, just like you pointed out, the DNSSEC addition to the DNS hosting is absolutely not visible to the customer. If they happen to buy DNS from us, they get DNSSEC, because we discovered really early that it's just not possible to ask the customer whether they want DNSSEC or not. Either you turn it on for your DNS hosting or not done, and that's where the cost is. You cannot have like DNSSEC only for one of your customers. It doesn't scale. Okay. So I just want to emphasize what you said, that you either invest or you don't. The other thing has to do with how the DNSSEC hosting provider is actually communicating with the registrar, and that must be done in an automated fashion. And today, every registrar that do handle DNSSEC, including us, develop their own API that the DNS hosting provider can use. And unfortunately, there is no common API for DNS hosting providers to communicate with the registrars. And that is more to pass the DS records onto the registries. And that's something that I think we from the ITF has not really done our homework there. But I do see now when the number of registrars that do handle DNSSEC is going up, I actually do see, to some degree, a common interest to actually come up with something there. So we'll see what's happening. The third thing I wanted to say is that for the parties that really want to run DNSSEC is normally enterprises. And my experience in that is that in those cases regarding DNS hosting, in that case, I encourage these enterprises to actually run the hidden master themselves, take care of the zone signing, and then the DNS hosting turns into just an ordinary slave service. Thank you.
Thanks. Yep.
I'm Sergius Leifa. I'm with a company called Accelerants out of Canada. In full disclosure, we actually... Can you hear me? Is it working? Yeah, we actually supply an appliance that automated the signing process. So... You can understand that we've been out there trying to find out what the interest is, et cetera. We've had the solution for some time. But yesterday I actually stumbled into a session. It was a closed session, but they seemed to have breakfast, so I sat in on it. And
yep, that's the ICANN way.
Yes. It was the commercial stakeholders. And a couple of things I learned there, a few people got up and they were discussing the role of ICANN. To the consumer, to the registrars, et cetera. And one of the things that came up was that inherently the customer's or the user's expectation is that ICANN will provide them with security of resolution, et cetera, et cetera. When you're talking about ICANN, the resolution can mean many things, but that individual actually meant resolving an IP address. So if they believe that ICANN... Part of ICANN's responsibilities to create that security in the marketplace. I'm saying to myself, and I hear what the registrars are saying, because the domain users aren't going to the registrars demanding it. So you're only getting a few requests. And I'm thinking and saying, why would an ICANN, if someone purchases a domain and that zone is signed already, that within the contract that they have to be DNSSEC? And I mean, I don't know what the cost is, $1, $2.
That's about the biggest can of worms that you could... No. I mean, conceptually...
When I buy a domain, there's certain things. You know, if I buy a .ca, there's a certain...
So hold on a second. Hold on. Don't confuse signing your DNS with creating security. That's like saying that if you buy a packet of condoms, nobody's ever going to get pregnant. That's like saying buying an SSL cert is going to automatically secure a website. That's absolute total and utter rubbish. You know, the thing is this, is that if you... That is an entire kind of false sense of security. That's one of those kind of, oh, it's got DNSSEC. Now it's all nice and shiny and secure.
I mean, we're not in a perfect world.
But you can't realistically expect me or any other registrar to suddenly agree to go off and do these things unless I can A, start charging you for it, and B, you know, I don't know, there's a B and a C and a D. I mean,
right, but the A is taken care of. You know, if buying a .com domain requires that you be DNSSEC or you be signed, and there's an extra dollar or whatever it is, that looks after your revenue in being able to do it. Right?
Yeah, but again, settle down.
Okay.
settle down. I appreciate the sincerity of the sentiment, but I think practically speaking, it's not going to happen. The process in the ICANN community to if everyone even agreed that we wanted to do that, it would be years to to go through the contract amendment process, to change the policies, to make that a requirement. When you talk about requirements in this community, it gets very tricky. So while I understand the sentiment, I don't think it's an attainable goal. And Michaela's about to come. Go ahead.
Well, you mentioned an IP address. This is one of the things I'm hearing people, you know, just talking about DNSSEC, yet I'm not hearing people talking about IPv6. You know, if you want something to resolve to an IP address, if there are no IP addresses and your ISP doesn't support IPv6, it's not going to resolve to anything. And I consider that to be a hell of a lot more pressing than building up this false sense of security that signing a zone is going to suddenly give you some super-duper power. The other side of it as well is, why would you sign a zone if the domain isn't actually being used or isn't even resolving? And what about the companies and individuals who register thousands of domain names for a variety of different reasons and don't actually want to do anything with them except just have them? So you want to force them to pay extra dollars just to get a false sense of security?
Yeah, I think the tendency is because registrars are the link to the consumers and to the end users, that a lot of the expectation is that it's up to registrars to educate and to, you know, make not just DNSSEC but IPv6 and everything to make that apparent to the end user. And I think registrars obviously have a different perspective on it.
Yeah. Let me just say that in .se we were the first ones started to do DNSSEC. We tried the first couple of months to chart for DNSSEC. Let me tell you, it was the biggest mistake ever done in DNSSEC deployment. You cannot charge for it.
Right. You can't charge for DNSSEC. I think everyone, unless Michele chooses he wants to.
Oh, I will.
Yeah.
I will quite happily charge for it.
I think Patrick was just here.
My name is Lars Lehmann. I'm with NetNode in Stockholm, operators of iRoute. I think you have to realize that security always comes at a cost. And sometimes it's a necessary cost because we're fighting a battle here against evil forces. So, and that goes for any part of society. When bad things start to happen, when the bad forces gain a new ability to intrude on our lives, we have to kind of fight back or invent new ways to protect that. So it's like a question, why do you have a lock on your door? Well, you take a cost of putting that lock in to prevent other financial damage that is supposedly or possibly going to be even bigger. So, yes, it does cost, but hopefully it gives us something back. And I'm not saying you have to do it for everything, but I agree that I think that it's going to evolve into our default view of how things work. And initially it's going to be high cost because there's always a first implementation that is going to be expensive. But as time goes on, we will find ways to automate it. It will be built in everything. And in 10 years' time, everything, all domains will be signed.
Yeah, and it's a fair point, and I will take my moderator hat off and put my personal opinion hat on.
You have an opinion?
I have opinions. I'm a firm believer that DNSSEC is absolutely a good step. My issue or my frustration with it is that it does not solve all of the problems in the world. It's a good step, but to Michele's point, I don't want the notion to be that, okay, checkbox, we've done DNSSEC, the world is a secure place. It's not. And there are many, many different vulnerabilities in the domain name space that still exist with DNSSEC. Okay, I'll take my...
I absolutely agree to that, but I hope that we will reach a situation where people would be surprised, the door doesn't have a lock. The lock isn't perfect. You can break it and so on, but you expect there to be a lock on the door.
That's a fair point. Yes, sir.
Hey, my name's Rick Lamb from ICANN, and this is a question for Joe. But first of all, I could thank Mikhail for slapping us around a bit, and because this is one of the problems I keep seeing is the adoption. But this is a question for Joe, and any others might have any feedback on this. How much outreach to the vendors or discussions have you had with vendors about DNSSEC? I mean, I've gone to various trade shows, CES meetings, and maybe some of the router shows as well. And, you know, I walked the expo floor and I talked to these guys, go, hey, look, this is a great thing. You do all kinds of stuff. Let them market. They're great at marketing. These people will say, look, shiny, you know, and get people to maybe pay for it. maybe for the wrong reasons, but at least get it out there. And so, but I get kind of a blank stare from most of these guys. So what have you heard?
We have done some work on that, and others have as well. I know there was, I think about 2 or 3 years ago, the SSAC had a report on home router devices and whether they supported DNSSEC. One of the things that we did was go to those trade shows. We would go to the shows and try to recruit some of those vendors to come into an interoperability lab that we provided. We have, I think, about 8,000 test cases you can come in and test at no cost to find out whether the devices or the systems that you're building operate within a DNSSEC enabled environment, and it tests IPv6. And so we wanted to give them an opportunity to before. And we started this before the route was signed and have been continuing it through today. But we allow them to come in, and we have been out there knocking on doors and trying to find some of those. And, we've had some of the big network providers come into the lab and test some of their equipment.
What have you heard of Curtis as far as building on to that? Not just in a sec, all this future. Application stuff. That takes about at least 2 to 5 years out for some of these people to get ready for. If you look at chip vendors, it's usually 2 to 5 years. That's the kind of thing I'm just wondering. That should excite some of these people, maybe worry some of them, but it should excite some.
Right, and again, I can point back to some of the surveys that we did. And there is information that these companies are investing in security measures focused around DNS, which includes DNSSEC. I think we're going to have the same challenge with preparedness for IPv6. So I think it's the infrastructure challenge of making sure that the entire ecosystem, because no one component can handle this whole thing, but all of those different components all have to be participating.
Yes, sir.
So Bill Manning, your comment about being unhappy because you didn't have the Swiss Army knife of security at your disposal kind of makes me chuckle, right? DNSSEC is one tool. It's not going to solve the security problems in the DNS. It's going to solve one set of problems, as Lars pointed out. I guess the second piece regarding cost is that signing is only half the equation. Validation at the end systems and the ability for applications to take advantage of that has lagged the efforts up front. And so if you sink cost now to sign the zones, there won't really be anybody that can use it for some period of time. And then the question is this is a chicken and egg question. I think Steve Crocker pointed this out maybe a decade ago, which is, which do you do first? The end systems or the infrastructure? The infrastructure was cheaper. There are people still working. There are people working on that validation and application integration, but it's not there yet. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't provide the infrastructure for that to work. Because if you wait, then it probably never will happen, and you'll lose that tool.
Yep, no, that's a fair point. So I guess we've got, about 5 minutes left? 4 minutes? I'm being mindful of time, Julie. So maybe just real quick, aside from a lot of the educational stuff that we've talked about, if both of you could speak just to what the biggest challenges are for registrar implementation in your viewpoint.
Just going back to what Bill was saying there, that's one of the key problems from my perspective. If there isn't any way for an end user to see something relating to DNSSEC, then they're not going to know about it. If they don't know about it, they're not going to ask for it. And if they're not going to ask for it, then I'm not going to invest significant resources in developing anything for it. Now, you could argue that philosophically I should do it, but I'm sorry, I run a commercial organization, I have finite resources, I'm going to put money into other things. For example, IPv6. We enabled DNSSEC on our resolvers, and that took us 25 minutes to half an hour, so of course we did it.
The key there was significant.
don't not do it, but make sure that it's a value, the value proposition is right.
Well, my main problem is that I've got a to-do list that never gets any shorter. I've got IPv6 on one side. I've got integrations with various CCTLDs, GTLDs. I've got SSLs over here. I've got new shiny objects coming from Microsoft. I've got another vendor over here who's decided to rewrite something and make it all lovely and wonderful. I knew this, I knew that, I knew the other. I mean, there's all these other pressures. You have to come back down to something simple and prioritization, and that's the key thing. It's fine if you are, you know, an Uber geek sitting in the corner and you can look at all these wonderful things from a command line and chat with your friends in IRC and go on about how wonderful the world would be if certain things happened. And I know these people, and they talk about it. It's like when I was talking to one of my techies, and I said, do we have enough bandwidth in the office? And he goes, don't worry, it's fine. If we need more, we'll just get more. And I was like, hold on a second. So I pulled him out, took him out to the center of the office. I stood him there and said, right, choose one of your colleagues. So what do you mean? I said, well, you know, you want more bandwidth. Choose one of your colleagues. I said, I don't understand. I said, well, if you want more bandwidth, I can get it for you, but I'm going to have to fire one of them. Because the bandwidth into the office is going to cost so many thousand per month. If I increase it by 20, 30, 40 megabits, I'm going to have to pay for it for something. I mean, sure, technically it's feasible, but financially it wasn't. And that is the thing. It's that you've got to make it so that it's financially feasible as well as being technically feasible. And that's the kind of the gap that I'm seeing.
Joe, I'm going to give you the last word.
So I guess I'm the glass half full guy, and I do think that that you know we'll continue to see adoption. I think we need to you know continue to educate the community all the way down to end users. Michaela will beat me up afterwards, I know, but that's okay. And I think the adoption is going to be slow and continuous, and then we'll reach some critical mass. And I think whoever it was said, you know, at some point, I think it was Lars said, at some point, it'll just be there for everything. I mean, it'll just become very routine. And until we get to that point, though, we're going to have challenges. Things are going to be more brittle. There are things that break because you have DNSSEC. We have to do things differently. So we need to be aware of the challenges. You know, we have really just begun with the deployments that have happened to date, and there are more coming. But this is really the start of the road of a DNSSEC-enabled internet, and I think we'll all be working together on this for a very long time.
Great. Well, I'll turn things back over to our hosts. Thank you all for the invitation, for organizing this. Thank you all for participating, and we'll see you.
And thank you, Matt and Michaela and Joe. And please join me in thanking them. And we'll just take a moment to switch to our next panel. Welcome, everyone, and we're going to switch to our next panel discussion. It's on the topic of domain name transfers, and I'd like to introduce our first panelist. That's Debbie Monahan from .nz, and I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, Debbie.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to start very briefly by talking about our structure. And .nz is set up as a country code a little bit differently from a number of others, in that we actually split our technical and our regulatory or policy functions. So .nz, the delegation holder, is Internet New Zealand. It's an incorporated society owned by its members. They have set up two subsidiary companies wholly owned by Internet NZ. I'm the CEO and commissioner of the Domain Name Commission, and we're responsible for the oversight of the .nz space. We set the policies, authorise the registrars, and ensure compliance against those. The registry, which is actually run by a guy that many of you will know, Jay Daly, is responsible for the technical operations running the registry and the DNS. So, next slide. So, with that structure in mind, our DNSSEC development has, if you like, controlled two parallel streams, both with the same goal of maintaining the chain of trust throughout the entire process, with NZRS responsible for the technical implementation and the Domain Name Commission looking after the policy development. Next slide. So what do we look at when we're doing the policy considerations? As has been mentioned this morning, what is recorded in the registry, who is responsible for what, how do we manage transfers, and how do we manage unsigning a name? Next slide. So what was decided is that the DS record would be generated and added to the registry to enable the DNS key to be authenticated, and that the DS record would be added to the who is output. Next slide. Registrants or the DNS operator will be responsible for managing, generating their own keys, determining how often they perform the key rollovers, and generating the DS records. So we ourselves won't be actually defining the standards for those, but that could be a point of differentiation between the different services that registrars actually offer. And registrars are responsible for adding the DS records to the registry. And a key part of this is that it's only the registrars that have access to the registry to update the records of the domain names. Next slide. So then how do we manage transfers? The possible approaches are not to allow the transfer of a signed name or requiring them to be unsigned before the transfer. Basically, there's no problem if you're happy to sign a name and stay with the same registrar. However, some registrants might not want to do that. They might want to change who's hosting the name, who is the registrar of the name, and unsigning to them may not be an option. So the possible approach is effectively lock a registrant into a registrar, and we consider that unacceptable because we've set out to create a competitive environment, giving registrants maximum choice and the ability to move transfer between different registrars. So our approach was to try and define a process of cooperation in the transfer process. And I think, as has been mentioned by Michaeli, that's not always an easy thing to achieve. What we do have, though, is that registrars are governed by .nz policies. And so what we can do in respect of registrars is specify that cooperation that's required in our policies to actually govern and control the registrar's actions. The problem is that not all hosts or DNS operators are registrars. They could be, or they could be the registrant, an ISP, any hosting provider. And the problem is that we do not have contracts or cannot control the actions of those DNS operators. We asked in our various consultations for what possible solutions we might be able to come up with, and no suggestions were basically received as to how we could actually get those DNS operators involved. But what we have put in the policy is that the Domain Name Commission will establish a contact repository where DNS operators who aren't registrars can actually lodge their information with the Domain Name Commission. And in the case of a communication issue during a transfer, we can help facilitate contact between the parties. But what we did do is change our policies and put in what cooperation and participation of the registrars was required. So it only applies in a very limited set of circumstances where both the current and proposed DNS operators are registrars. And as you can see on the screen, but prior to a name server update, the losing DNS operator must provide the zone information for the domain name when requested to do so and accept and add the new DNS key to the zone for the domain name. Resign it and continue to serve this until they are notified the change is complete. The gaining DNS operator then provides the new DS record to the losing DNS operator, who provides it to the registry. The name servers for the domain name can then be updated with the registry. Following the name server update, the gaining DNS operator must delete the old DS record and DNS key provided by the losing DNS operator. The losing DNS operator must remove the domain name from their name servers when requested, but must not remove it before being requested to do so. So that's the actual wording in the policy, and the policy does actually say that DNS operators who aren't registrars are also encouraged to follow the process. But as I said before, we have no control over whether they do or not. And in respect of managing unsigning, again, we've actually put in the policy that registrars are required to remove the DS records for a sign name as soon as it is practical to do so once the registrant elects to unsign a name. Now, we're not saying that these policy positions are perfect. We got some great feedback from a number of registrars, including Glenn Eustace and others who actually helped mould the policies. We don't believe that on day one that we're going to be faced with a large influx and numbers of people who are going to want to sign name. We expect to have to reform and revise the policy as we go on, and potentially, as it develops, look at ways that we can actually automate it to try and remove any potential issues from the process. In respect of our timing, the registry is well advanced and they're currently undertaking testing. And if all goes well and to plan and there's no fish-hooks along the way, they're looking at being fully operational by the end of this year. And next year, more information on the technical side is on the registry site, and on the policy side is on the Domain Name Commission site. So the links in that are provided. And feel free, if you have technical questions, to contact Dave Baker, who's here from the registry. I myself am on the Domain Name Commission side, and so we'll refer any technical questions asked at the session to... So thank you.
Thank you very much, Debbie. And I think what we'll do is we'll just go on to Roy's presentation and then we'll save the Q&A for after the presentations. Let me bring your slides up for a moment, Roy.
Thank you, Julie. My name is Roy Arens. I work for Nominate UK. I'm the head of research there. At Nominate, we do things slightly different than the rest of the registry world. In terms of domain transfers, we have a push model. What it means, if you transfer a domain between registrars, the transfer needs to be initiated from the losing registrar to the gaining registrar. So domain name transfers from A to B, it's A who pushes the domain to B. Now, that's different from almost all other registries. Most of the registries that I know have a pull strategy where the domain name transfer is initiated by the gaining registrar. The gaining registrar at Nominate needs to explicitly accept that change. The alternative is that it has auto-accept enabled, so it by default accepts all incoming transfers. Another thing we have now at Nominate, we have a bit, basically, that says that registrars must indicate that they can handle the yes records. It's basically a one-pager with a yes button on it, and if the yes button is clicked, then the registrar admits, or we see the registrar as DNSSEC enabled. So I'm not going to talk about DNS and DNS domain transfers from the operator's perspective, but solely from the registrar's perspective, because we deal with registrars and not directly with registrants. So if you look at this in a binary way, a domain name might be signed, might not be signed. The losing registrar might be DNSSEC enabled or might not be DNSSEC enabled, and the same goes for the gaining registrar. So that gives us 8 possible different tracks, but let me quickly turn it down to 2. If the domain is not signed, we don't have to talk about domain signing transfer. If the losing registrar is not DNSSEC enabled, then the domain that transfers won't be signed. So that leaves us with 2 states that we have to think about. One is a signed domain transfers from a DNSSEC enabled to a DNSSEC challenged registrar, or it transfers to a DNSSEC enabled registrar. So we have 2 different things that we do. One is, if a domain name transfers to an enabled registrar, we keep the DS record. We don't touch it. We keep it intact. We see it as just another string, just like NS records that transfers with it. If the gaining registrar is not DNSSEC enabled, we simply drop the DS record. And the reason for that is, if you keep the DS record intact, the registrant can't go through their new registrar to change that DS record. So in a sense, the DS record becomes orphaned. So that has a few consequences, this policy. So if we remove the DS record because of this policy and because the new gaining registrar is unable to work with DS records, that means that domain is seen as unsigned or as not signed. In fact, DNSSEC records might still be there, but we've simply taken out the link in the chain of trust. Now, if the gaining registrar is DNSSEC enabled, we keep the DS record intact, so we don't do anything. That means that if the operator stays the same, so a single operator just chooses to switch registrars, then in fact there's no problem. But the advice from us is, if the operator is changed as well, then it's unlikely that the gaining operator will keep on using the private keys it has gotten from the former operator. And so it has to initiate the DS record change. But it has to do it itself through its registrar, through to us. We don't do anything with the DS record if the gaining registrar is DNSSEC enabled. We don't want to be the exception in the registry world. We want to make it easier for registrars to deal with a single policy. Now, of course, that's not always possible. Registrars and registries have different policies. But we are discussing this European-wide with the Belgians, the Dutch, and with EurID, with the Germans. We are in talks with .info, with Afilias on this, to come up, to look at each other's policies on this and try to come up with the least set of options, if that makes any sense. That's it for me. Thank you. I'm handing over back to Julie.
Thank you, Roy. And I think what we'd like to do now is go ahead and open it up for discussion and questions from the audience. So would anyone like to be the first one? No one ever seems to want to. Bill, thank you.
Bill Manning, co-opting Patrick Falstrom. The question that I every time I look at this, the thing that concerns me is the case where the delegation has released the DS record in the form of a secure entry point to its clients, and they have put it into their local key, their validator. What mechanisms are there to help those people update their local key rings when change occurs?
Bill, what we recommend is not to configure any local domains in their validators.
Yes,
hold on. So that means that if you configure the root key in your resolver, that's fine. We always recommend against configuring the .uk key, the co.uk key, or any one of the subdomains. What you will see in general, or what we have seen in the field, is that folks who do locally store trust anchors for local domains, it's mostly their own domains. We have hardly seen anyone configuring a delegation from Nominet, so a delegation, assume for instance bbc.co.uk, by someone that's not bbc.co.uk. So my recommendation is against this. What do you do? I don't think we need to. We need to have a technical answer for this non-problem.
Okay. So based on Roy's recommendation, everyone on the internet will acknowledge Roy's recommendation as a sound, stable thing. It doesn't happen, Roy. I know people that, in fact, do put secure entry points in and continue to do so even after the root sign, because you do not have a consecutive chain. There are good policy reasons to actually put in extra entry points. So recommendation or not, it does happen. I appreciate your response. It says you have no plans to help people identify and mitigate this particular problem.
Well, let me just rebuttal this a little bit. There is a protocol extension called RC5011. We haven't implemented that, and I recommend that anyone who configures your key locally for some domain, make sure that that domain actually have implemented 5011. That's it. Thanks.
Patrick Veldstrom, I have a question for you on your slides on what you're doing in New Zealand. And you talked about DNS operator, and when you as a registry detect that the DNS operator changes, can you go a little bit more into how you do that detection?
The policy.
And the reason why I ask is because this is something we have been discussing in Sweden since we deployed DNSSEC, and we have not found any way of doing that.
No, the policy only covers where the DNS operator is also a registrar, and that the transfer is transferring not only the registrar but the DNS operator at the same time. So it's the policy can only cover that limited set of time.
So how do you know whether the registrar is also the DNS operator?
Well, they would have it in their systems as well, the name servers and other such things that they're bound by. So basically it's where it's a name server change, the registrar is controlling the name server, and the registrar is also controlling the domain name management, the management of that domain name. So, but prior to that, one of the checks that a registrar, on accepting a transfer, if they're not DNSSEC enabled, they need to check whether the name is signed before they'll accept a transfer in. So there's a number of other policy steps that we've got in place to try and protect someone who's actually signed a name.
Okay, because I would like to talk more about this later on, because if it is the case that you have your zone signed, it's not very often the actual signing is happening on a name server that you have a delegation made to. So you don't have any MS records that is pointing to whoever is actually doing the signing, which means that you don't really detect in many cases that the DNS operator that is signing the zone is changing. The MS record changing is not really detecting that, but we can talk about that afterwards because we have some experience in critical change there. And because we need some ideas on how to solve this problem. Because one of the things, let me continue this. We do not want to go down the path of forcing the DNS operators to register with the registry.
Because
that creates problems for DNS operators that are sort of far away. So we'd like to stay away from that problem, but it's a difficult problem to solve. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And more questions from the audience?
I've got some from up here. The first one is for Debbie. I'm really pleased to see that you're recognizing in your policy structure that there's at least a potential or a theoretic separation between the registrar function and the name server operator function. Do you have information that gives you any insight as to how frequently they actually are separate entities? 1%, 20%? Any idea?
The fact is that we know from looking at the records that a number of .nz names aren't actually hosted by the registrar that's actually managing the name. But to us, it's the issue of actually the DNS operator versus a registrar. And to be honest, this is an issue we actually have now with name server changes. And if you like, and Michaeli kind of referred to it before, some don't honour time to lives and other such things. So there's no standard governing DNS operators doing name server changes now anyway, even without DNSSEC. So this doesn't try and cover all DNS opportunities and transfers, but DNSSEC adds a complexity to it. And we're hoping that as we work through those issues, we actually might learn more to actually give us some solutions for the whole general issue of name server changes on domain names.
One of the things that seems to be inconsistent in various parts of the world is how much transfer actually occurs of names and name servers. And I think that as CCTLD folks, do you have any insight as to some percentage or how, you know, when a transfer happens, are there some people that have a name that are sort of registrar hoppers, or is it sort of randomly? Do you have any insight in those kind of activities? Because that'll clearly affect how important or how hard, how bad the problem is for DNSSEC, is how much it happens in general.
We do monitor the number of domain name transfers between registrars. The thing is, in .nz is actually free to transfer. You just can't transfer during the five-day registration grace period. So we do have people who will go to the cheapest registrar to register a domain name and after 5 days transfer away to someone who might have better services. So there are people who actually do that. We don't believe there's not so many. The percentages are still relatively low, though, compared to the number. And we believe that the percentage that will actually sign a name and then want to transfer will be significantly lower even again. Probably a lot of businesses tend to actually have relationships with their provider and will stay there. And probably at the start, especially the ones the most likely to sign will be organisations who want to add that extra degree of security.
I don't have the exact numbers ready that you're asking for, but our registry is growing close to 10 million data points currently. We see an enormous amount of changes, and with changes I mean address changes, for instance, or status changes, or anything really, or one NS record changed, that kind of changes. So part of those changes, of course, are tag holder changes. Basically, when a registrar changes, when a domain holder changes to another registrar, I'll have to find those numbers out. We do have them, but I'll have to find those numbers out. The other thing is, with regards to with changes. Or with regards to register transfers, what we do see a lot is, for instance, when a large registrar changes one of their name servers where they have a fair amount of domains parked for future use or hold, when they change one of these name servers, it's in fact a single change, but we see 10,000 of changes in the database. So it's actually, we have to define before we can talk about those numbers, right, what exactly is measured. And even in the internal organization, we discuss things like what's the unit of change Do we measure, for instance, per 5 minutes, per hour, per day, per month? And do we bucket them? Is it what the averages are? And as a researcher, from my research perspective, I want those numbers to be accurate. And so I can't give you a ratio. I can't give you a percentage. But if I dig a little bit deeper, I'll have an answer for you. Thanks.
Well, one of the reasons that I'm asking in this line of questioning is at certainly the GTLD affiliated registrars that are very much in the heavy competition mode with each other. And I know certainly the CCTLD registrars are too, but it varies somewhat by CC. In terms of transfers with DNS, once a zone is signed, one of the things that I've not heard mentioned by some of these highly competitive folks is the what to me seems like a potential business opportunity for someone operating a separate name server service that would be in place primarily to facilitate transfer between registrars. Because if the registrar function and name server function for assigned zone are separated, the transfer between registrars is much simpler. And I didn't know if that was anything that either of you had heard anything about or heard any discussions about as a potential opportunity for somebody to set up essentially a transfer-centric name server service.
Yes, we have thought about that, but this also relates to the fact that we push domains from, or that registrars push domains out of themselves, right? So the transfer is a little bit easier, but we still do have those moments where a losing registrar might not be as cooperative as it needs to be. For instance, sharing the private keys and might have a good policy for that. We have a new service that will soon be rolled out, and we've talked about this at the last ICANN meeting. And this is a service called, signing as a service, DNSSEC as a service. What it means is that we actually are able to sign other people's domains, and just sign them, and become a bump in the wire, basically, that we receive a zone transfer from the losing registrar, for instance, sign the domain, or from the operator, sign the domain, right? And so we basically become the transient, the man in the middle, the registrar in the middle, so that we can both be the cooperative gaining registrar and subsequently be the cooperative losing registrar.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Steve Crocker. I like that cooperative registrar in the middle idea. I hadn't heard that before. One of the more subtle details in this process has to do with how long the transfer takes and whether changes to the zone are permitted during the transfer process. Those two things are tied together, of course. If you transfer very quickly, then it's okay to take an interrupt in your ability to update it. But if it takes a very long time to transfer because it's a very big zone, then that may be a further complication in the operation of that zone. Have you anything to comment about that?
I was about to say 1 minute longer and I'll start dancing, and I'm not sure that's a good idea. We did consider at one point in time what the delay should be between the transfer between the gaining and the accepting, the gaining and losing registrar when you transfer a domain. The thing is, from an operational perspective, is actually an atomic action, right? Moving the tag from one registrar to another. So if you have a domain name, it's either with registrar A or with registrar B, so the change is atomic. So introducing a delay means that you have to come up with a threshold that you can introduce, and I think that every threshold that you introduce makes the whole effort much more confusing.
So I apologize. If it's solely transferring the registrar function, then I agree with you that because that really doesn't have any impact on the resolution process. But if you're moving the zone operation, from the name service, from one to another, then that's a multi-stage process in which there's got to be some overlap between the old and the new.
Yes, the so this is actually independent of registry. If a DNS operator transfers, sorry, if a domain holder transfers between operators, right, and both can sign a domain name, right, then what we recommend is that the gaining operator will first completely set up the domain, so it resolves, and the two servers then run in parallel. From the old operator to the new operator, run in parallel, then the registry may switch, and then the old operator can stop hosting the zone. There are a fair amount of timers that needs to be checked. These are the TTLs from the parent, the TTLs from the child. What Michele just mentioned, that some ISPs will still go to the old name servers. You have elaborated on that in the last ICANN meeting. This is a child sticky DNS resolver, and you have to take care of that as well. And then, of course, when you sign the domain, when you do a zone transfer from a primary to a secondary, that's yet another timer that you have to keep in mind. So, and all these things amplify each other.
I have just one final, I guess, comment based or response based on the earlier interchange on the push model and the question that Bill asked and trust anchors and so forth. And that is that I would hope as the education and policy documents get put together that there is information as part of that that makes recommendations to people that are using this approach for transfers. That just exactly what you said, they either not use trust anchors or recommend that their secure entry point not be used, the secure entry point, or if they do, that they be sure to use the 5011 mechanism. So get it well documented so people are at least warned that's the expectations.
If I may respond to that, within the IETF, there's a process currently going on to get something called a DPS standardized. A DPS is a DNSSEC policy statement. And several registries have done this already. We have a fair amount of internal documentation that all put together overlap a DPS, but we don't call it a DPS yet. And as soon as that is standardized, right, we can put our information in the DPS. We can actually already start, and we have some internal stuff. And that will explain exactly how we do it, why we do it, when we do it, and also, to a certain limit, say what we don't do compared to what others do. Timers will be in there. Machines that we use will be in there. The HSMs that we use will be in there. So the documentation is available, currently only on request. But it will be publicly available once we publish our DPS.
Great. Thank you. And thank you very much, Debbie. Thank you very much, Roy. And thank you to your organizations for being so engaged and supportive of the whole DNSSEC deployment activities. We recognize your very valuable contributions to the community. Thanks again.
Please join me in joining. Thank you. Now, we have time for a very short break, about 10 minutes. The program will start up at 4:15 at exactly 10:15. There should be coffee out in the lobby area, and we'll see you back here shortly.